and mark the passing of one of our great Americans as well. Senator John Glenn, a friend to many of us and a genuine American hero, passed away today.
$10 coffee. That's what Starbucks co-founder Howard Schultz wants you to drink at the new Starbucks Reserve brand.
It definitely feels like a Starbucks, but definitely a more upscale version of a Starbucks.
One of the most important relationships we must improve is our relationship with China. And I just want to tell you officially, the man I have chosen as our ambassador to China, Terry Branstad.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday. It's December 9th, 2016, 5:09 in the morning. Boy, you know you're going to have a rough day when you can't even get the first time check out. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. Glad to have you along. We certainly are remembering all of the good things that Senator John Glenn, the former astronaut, did today. He died yesterday at the age of 95. Throughout the morning, we'll have more remembrances of him on the Steve Cochran Show coming up, as well as we move into this Friday edition. We also have Paul Nolte in the house today, and later on, we'll check in with Rick Sini, our airfare expert. Lots of news with United Airlines and this new fare that sort of caused a little bit of a stir. We'll talk about that, and we have some itchy flight attendants on American Airlines. Will hit that as well. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk for this Friday morning, Dow futures are pointing up just a bit, 19 points. The S&P futures are down just a fraction there. The NASDAQ is up about 4. NASDAQ futures up about 4. And crude oil is trading up as well, almost a full percent this morning at 51.28 at last check. Overseas this morning, European markets mixed with some up, some down. Most of them, I think it's pretty much half and half with those as in Europe this morning. And in Asia, things are pretty much going well this morning. The Nikkei finishing up the day, going to finish up the day up about 230 points at 18,996. Some news happening this morning we'll keep bringing up to date with. There's a lawsuit against Monsanto. Washington State is suing the agrochemical giant over PCB pollution. Washington State is the first state to sue the Monsanto Corporation over pollution from PCBs. The governor there announced the lawsuit in a news conference late yesterday. He says chemicals were used in many industrial and commercial applications, including paint, coolant, sealants, and hydraulic fluids. PCB contamination impairs rivers, lakes, and bays around the country. The lawsuit seeks potentially hundreds of millions of dollars and also cleanup costs from Monsanto. Also today, a California official says Bristol-Myers Squibb Company will pay about $19 million to settle allegations that it promoted the antipsychotic drug Abilify for unapproved uses and misled doctors about its dangers. Well, as we look at Wall Street this morning, let's bring in Paul Nolte now from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Well, you know, we look at the big board, and we've had, what, 19 now out of 23 winning sessions?
Yes.
Are we headed for shore leave like a drunken sailor here, or what's happening?
Welcome to the Christmas rally. This is the much vaunted and rarely shows up, actually, the Santa Claus rally. So investors are looking at the always a little optimistic going into year end, looking at the next year and bidding up stock prices here. So we've got a nice rally. Everything is in gear, if you will. The question obviously becomes, how long does that last?
I wanted to get your notion, and also maybe we could explain this a little bit to listeners who may not be familiar with it, but there is an indicator on Wall Street that only has clicked in before 1929, I believe, 1930-something, and 2001.
No, just 1929 and 2000, 1999, 2000.
And this is the indicator that says, whoa, right, basically?
It's the CAPE indicator, and it's, so what that means is that's the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio. And so what it does is, instead of taking a look at how much a company earned or the S&P earned last year, it looks over the full 10-year cycle, which incorporates both good times and bad, and takes a look at that average. So it's a rolling 12 months of earning, or 10 years of earnings. And then looking at the PE on that. And right now it's about 27. And in those 2 years that we indicated, you know, the markets were very expensive. And in 2000 was unusual in the fact that, you know, it hit that level in early 1999, but the markets continued to get even more expensive. Valuations, I will tell you, though, are a very poor timing tool, but they are a good indicator, at least, of what we might see in the way of future returns for the next couple of years, as opposed to next week.
So this notion that it might be signaling a pretty big drop in the market, is that something we should pay attention to?
I'm not sure it signals a drop necessarily. So there's one of two ways that you can bring down that ratio. One is the stock market coming down. And the other one is that earnings actually pick up and the markets go sideways. So that's what I mean. When you take a look over the next 5 years, we're projecting a low single digit rates of return, 3-4%, which is about half of what you would normally expect out of the marketplace because we're starting from such a very high level. So again, that's what I'm saying. When you look going forward the next 3 to 5 year, total return from a portfolio, from an equity portfolio, may not be all that high.
So how then would you describe what we've been seeing then since Election Day? Was it a feeding frenzy? Is it just a bunch of people trying to make a little money, or how would you describe it?
Well, it's very specific to sectors. So banks have taken off. Industrial stocks have done very well here. Utilities and other interest rate sensitive areas of the market have not. And that's a function of some of the anticipation that some of the regulations will be rolled back, that we're going to do a lot of infrastructure spending. So that's a lot of anticipatory buying well in advance of any legislation being passed or any rules being changed. So they're, I think, a little bit ahead of the game here. And so the suggestion would be to take a little bit of money off the table. We've all been given, 3-5% since the end of, since the election, and in some of the financial stocks as much as 20%. When you've been handed that in a very, very short period of time, you tend to say thank you and move to something else.
Well, we'll continue our conversation here after traffic. We'll talk a little bit more about the rallies, maybe look ahead to interest rate day next week as we continue our pre-dawn business conversation this morning with Paul Nolsey of Kingsview Asset Management. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, a couple of stocks in trouble as they head to the opening bell later this morning. Caterpillar pre-market is off about 1.5%. Also this morning, one of the gainers that we've been watching throughout the week this week is Deere & Company. They're up almost 1%. We've also been sort of focused on Boeing this week. They sort of have recovered all of what the Trump tweet led them to this week. They're up almost 1% pre-market as well today. This is the opening bell. It's 5:20.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. U.S. markets again set all-time highs on Thursday, pushed along by optimism over a European stimulus program. The Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed 65 points to 19,614. The S&P 500 picked up almost 5 points. The NASDAQ Composite rose 23.5. The Labor Department says fewer people signed up for unemployment benefits last week, a sign the job market remains healthy. 2 million Americans are now collecting unemployment checks, down 10% from a year ago. And industry group is forecasting airline profits of $35.5 billion this year, down from a previous projection. Analysts blame continued economic, political, and security risks. They say the industry is more resilient following years of restructuring. And Hyundai is recalling more than 41,000 Entourage minivans from the 2007 and 2008 model years because the hoods can fly open while driving. A secondary hood latch can rust and remain in the unlatched position. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:21. Welcome back to the program. Paul Nolte is in the house today, our portfolio manager, Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, yesterday we had one of our thought leader discussions in, and the discussion sort of went to who's fueling this rally? Because we always hear it's the Trump-fueled rally. And Don Lloyd, who's one of our experts from Associated Bank, said he thought it would be, you know, whoever won the election, the markets still would have gone in this direction, still would have had this sort of rally. You disagree a little.
I do disagree. Because it was a surprise factor, and we saw that overnight on election night where the markets were down 5% once it became clear that Trump was going to win. And what happened after that and what's happened really subsequent to that is you have the winners and losers, and the winners being in the industrial stocks, the banking stocks, on the expectation that we're going to have a lot more spending. Regulations are going to roll back here a little bit. You've seen a lot of the utility stocks and other interest rate sensitive issues really taken on the chin because interest rates have gone up on the expectation that all of the spending is going to be detrimental to our deficit and it's going to force interest rates higher. I'm not sure that the markets would have reacted in that fashion were Hillary Clinton to be elected. So I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Yeah, because she wasn't going to roll back regulations.
No, but she was certainly going to do a lot of spending, mm-hmm. so that may have still helped the industrial stocks. But, I think the markets would have reacted differently to that.
Well, one of the other big things that happened this week, actually twice this week, is that there were tweets from different folks about different things. One from Donald Trump about Boeing, set Boeing down almost a full percent and a half, and then yesterday there were some health care issues that hit the bottom or went down because of a tweet. What kind of responsibility do players have and also investors have in not only watching some of this stuff but reacting to this stuff?
You know, it's the reaction more than it is anything else. And it's, again, you know, if I go back to the election or go back to Brexit or go further back to when China devalued the yuan a little more than a year ago, the markets have a knee-jerk reaction, and the first thing they do is buy, or the first thing they do is sell. And then when the dust settles, everybody looks around and says, well, that was kind of stupid. I probably shouldn't have done that. And that's why making that immediate decision on election night, I'm selling everything, probably not a good thing. Again, step back and realize that this is a much longer-term process. It's still about company earnings. It's still about overall economic growth. We don't know what Trump's policies will be. We don't know what that impact is going to be. And then also some of the unintended consequences of whatever happens out of that. So you take the information as it comes, but try not to allow it to color your immediate decision about investing.
So as December comes in here midstream, there are some good places to invest out there. Do you have any thoughts about where people might put some money?
You know, it's interesting. Again, as we talked about with the big moves in the marketplace and some of the banking stocks and so on, it's an area that we kind of shy away from at this point because we've gotten such great returns over the last month or so. I still do like international. International from a valuation perspective. We were talking about the U.S. valuation earlier. International and emerging markets especially are very inexpensive here. The problem will be if the dollar continues to be strong. It's going to be harder then to generate those returns overseas. But we don't think the dollar is going to stay strong for a long time. And so we'll see some good returns there. Still like bonds, but more on the short-term basis. So try not to buy a 30-year bond, but maybe a 2-3-year bond. You'll still do okay with that and provide a little bit of a cushion if the markets happen to go a little sideways on you.
Where do you see yields on these bonds going in the next week or two?
Well, certainly the Fed will be raising rates next week. We feel pretty certain that's going to be the case. And a case is being made, at least, that they may raise rates 2 times next year to get a little closer to normal. But again, going into this year, we thought they were going to raise it 4 times, and here we are, they're going to raise it once. So again, going back to the economic data, we'll have to keep an eye on retail sales and employment and all those other types of things to gauge how strong the economy is. And realize, too, that any legislation that gets passed under the new administration won't have an economic impact, really, until late 17 at the earliest, probably 2018.
I'm seeing there are some areas that have been doing really well over the past month. Prison stocks, private prison stocks, also the banking stocks, as we've been talking about. What else have you seen out there that's doing well?
Again, going back to a lot of the industrial stocks, the anticipation is there's going to be a lot of spending going on in the infrastructure and such. So those are the two key areas. Energy has picked up here as well, so the energy stocks have done very well. Both banking and energy have still probably another 20 to 30% to go to get back to the old high. So banking to the 2007 level, energy back to maybe about a year and a half ago before energy prices crumbled from 100 down to 20. So there may be some more room to run on those, but they've experienced a big run. here recently.
So when Janet Yellen and the Fed sit down next week and they decide this interest rates, they're probably going to be looking at the health of the economy. What would you say the health of the economy is right now?
The health of the economy has improved some, but the data is still, some good, some bad. So when we take a look at GDP growth, we got a print of close to 3% the last quarter. We're probably getting close to that. We're seeing wage growth picking up. We're seeing some commodity prices also go a little bit higher here. So inflation is starting to finally creep back into the economy, and that's what the Fed and central banks around the world have been wanting to see. They want to see a little bit of inflation come back because they have no tools to fight deflation. So we're starting to see that, so they're going to feel a little bit more emboldened to be comfortable in raising rates.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. You can go to kingsview.com/WGN, sign up for Nolte's notes. Paul, we'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being in with us. Have a good week.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:39 as we continue with our Friday edition of the program. Airlines in a festive mood this holiday season, reflecting a forecast for heavy holiday travel, record year for global industry profits, improving unit revenue in the U.S. The industry trade group Airlines for America said yesterday that 45.5 million passengers will fly globally on U.S. airlines during the 21 period that begins Friday, December 16th, next Friday. Number is up 3.5% from 2015. If the current trends continue, the report says U.S. airlines will carry a record number of passengers this year, exceeding the total of 798 million passengers in 2015. Our regular Friday conversation with Rick Cini, the president and CEO of FairCompare.com in Dallas. Rick is with us this morning from Dallas. Rick, we were talking last week about United's new fare area, the new ticketing area, this basic economy, which is a little cheaper than regular economy, targeting business users. Almost immediately after this announcement by United, New York Senator Chuck Schumer was on the television saying he's opposed to it, calling for United to roll this back. Is there a little bit of misunderstanding going on here? What's happening with that?
Because American and Delta have very similar products that they've said they're going to be offering, so he's got to pick on them all if he's going to pick on one. Look, this is this is a good question I have for Mr. Schumer. They have antitrust agreements with people in Europe. They also have a consolidation that basically has four airlines controlling 80% of traffic. I'd like to address those things first before he addresses this particular issue, because those are the ones that actually drive a ticket price. You know, whether or not you're going to sit in the last three rows of the aircraft and have to pay for overhead bin space, they're already doing it on Spirit Airlines and Frontier Airlines, so they'd have to give those people a call as well.
Yeah, and it makes you want to ignore the calls. I mean, when he says something serious, because this is one of those things where you have a choice for this fare. It's not like you're being automatically put into it.
Yeah, they know it's a sore subject with consumers, so senators and politicians know if they say something, they can get a few TV spots to have a chat about it. But I'd rather them address, the issue of Delta not participating in all the different marketplaces that are out there for comparison shopping. There's all sorts of things they could do that would be much more easier and better for consumers than worrying about the last three rows of a handful of aircraft.
So let's talk about American Airlines. The people there are really not liking these uniforms, and they've sort of stepped up the fight against them.
Yeah, no, you have about 70,000 front-facing customers at American. If you assume that they have between two and four uniforms, that's several hundred thousand uniforms. The union is saying they're causing all sorts of issues with allergies, hives, breakouts. They don't smell good, and they're asking them to recall them. Now, I recall when peanuts pretty much got recalled from aircraft because of peanut allergies and potential stuff on aircraft. So I hope they treat it with the same sort of quickness and due diligence with that. I actually used to be in the manufacturing industry. I grew up in that industry with my father in women's manufacturing, and I used to get hives and whatnot when certain batches of fabric would come through, and I know it can be extremely painful. So this is something that they need to address and address it quickly. They have new paint on their aircraft, new paint on their employees. How they implement that's very important for those folks.
And it would seem like the latter of that is a potential sort of emergency sort of scenario, because the last thing you want are flight attendants who have respiratory problems and eye irritation.
Absolutely. These are the people that save people's lives, right, on aircraft. So you want them I want my pilot in good shape. I want my flight attendants in good shape. I want them happy, and I want them allergy free.
So you ask a question here on your blog. Do you remember when you could fly from New York to London in 3.5 hours instead of 8? Supersonic flights, are they back on the horizon?
If you're a millennial, you probably don't remember that.
Right. Okay, well, it sounds like we've lost Rick Cini there. Let's see if we can't reconnect him here momentarily on the telephone. Rick is back with us. Rick?
Yeah, I know. I mean, millennials would have to, we're probably not even bored when we had the Concorde back with British Airways and Air France flying back and forth in about 4 hours across the Atlantic. And then to some degree, you know, this new aircraft that they're talking about out of this company in Denver, Colorado, would be flying actually a bit faster, a little over Mach 2. That's 1,500 miles an hour, a little bit over that, which is about three times what you would expect out of a 737, which is a little over 500 miles an hour. So now you're down in the low 3 hour range, basically flying into Europe, which is unbelievably useful for a lot of people. The question is, are they willing to pay for it time and time again? You know, is the Fortune 5000 willing to pay for a service like that? Can the airlines make that math work? And I think it's going to be a tough sell. You have actually most airlines getting rid of most of their first class and going all business class. And you have global economic austerity projected for the next 10 to 20 years. So the math is going to have to work. But I'd love to see them do it, because I'd be one of their first customers.
Yeah, and so we have sort of memories of Concorde. And, you know, the reason I think that went into mothballs is because of that horrible accident I believe outside of Paris, right?
Yeah, no, and they have to prove this. Clearly, they have to prove that this is safe. It's a radical design departure in aircraft. It's only 45 seats. It's a relatively small aircraft for the number of passengers that are out there. So, you know, as we saw with the Dreamliner, for example, it had issues with batteries. It delayed for several years. This is going to be something, you know, in the kin of, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. So clearly, Branson has said recently that he wants to jump into something like this. They already have Virgin Galactic, which is sort of interstellar flight. So we'll have to see if he puts his money where his mouth is. But it's an interesting idea. I love ingenuity. It's sort of what I would call the next moonshot stuff that we had sort of back in the late 50s all the way through the early 60s. And I'd love to see sort of a new made in America jet flying 1,500 miles an hour.
Yeah, and Richard Branson can be a driving force. And, you know, NASA is also sort of investigating different technologies with this, too. So maybe they'll put their heads together.
I would love to see that. Yeah, no, I think, again, for air travel like this, it's extremely expensive. I think if you look at it, there may be one or two athletes like LeBron James or something could afford this aircraft. But the normal business folks, if they don't have the free, even if I had 7 or 8 of those aircraft around the U.S., could I really fill it up every time with people, even if the price point was correct? There's so many other aircraft and so many other frequencies that I could take. Yes, it's a little bit longer, but I still have jet lag because the time zones do change.
So, Rick, for those of us who have a little time off around the holidays but not necessarily on the holidays, what are good fares are out there? Where can we get away to?
Yeah, there's a couple of different things. I know if you're trying to get away during the Christmas season, it's a really tough to get away out of the Chicago area, but it is one of the cheaper cities to fly out of. I was looking, for example, sort of before Christmas, if you wanted to get away for a couple of days, you could get away to places like Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas in the low 200 range. That's pretty good price points. Southern California, Los Angeles is running about $100 cheaper than San Diego at $270. So you can still get away. Chicago, Dallas, some of these Midwestern cities down the middle of the country actually have fairly decent pricing because of their nice geographic location in the middle. But the real deals are actually for flying sort of after the first week in January, where price points are way lower than we saw last year, and also flying into Europe, where we're seeing price points drop by anywhere from 20% to 25%. So it may be this coming year is the year to take that once-in-a-lifetime trip to Europe.
All right, Rick, safe, happy travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
All right, bye. Rick Cini is the Fair Compare CEO and founder. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cini, at Fair Compare, and at faircompare.com. It's 547.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 550 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are up just about 25 points now. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are a little bit higher as well. Crude oil is trading at about $51.30 a barrel, up almost a full percent there this morning. Let's get the latest on agriculture commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning, Steve. As we wind down another week, we still don't have a Secretary of Agriculture. And that's apparently going to be one of the last cabinet picks that President-elect Trump will make. But he did make a selection and an appointment this week I want to talk about for a moment, if I can, Steve. And that's picking the governor of Iowa, Terry Branstad, to be U.S. ambassador to China. It's an important post, and I think picking Governor Branstad is the best choice he could, and let me tell you why. The relationship between the president of China, Xi Jinping, and Iowa Governor Branstad goes back about 30 years. And during that time, Governor Branstad has visited China at least 6 times, and the Chinese president has traveled to Iowa twice, including once while Branstad was governor. This, of course, is the second time that Terry Branstad has been the governor of the state of Iowa. And I thought he made a rather interesting comment after the appointment by President-elect Trump. He said that he has a 30-year friendship with the Chinese president. He said President-elect Trump understands my unique relationship to China and has asked me to serve in a way I had not previously considered. Now, his name on the Secretary of Agriculture list, and I think there were quite a few of us who thought he would have a pretty good shot at that job. But then this came out of the blue, and I think it's a good one. It was pretty much welcomed by Republican and Democratic members of the party. And one of the quotes read, "He's tenacious, and trust me, with the Chinese, you need to be tenacious." And those were the words of the former Iowa governor, Tom Vilsack, who is winding down his term as the Secretary of Agriculture. And incidentally, Tom Vilsack will be the first eight-year secretary we've had since back in 1960, when Orville Freeman, who was the governor of Minnesota, was nominated to serve by President Kennedy. And when President Johnson took over, he kept him. So he is our last full two-term secretary until now. And
Orion,
Tom Vilsack is now.
Yeah, and Orion, I have another question about one of Trump's other appointments for you, because yesterday I saw the National Farm Bureau and other farm bureaus across the country applaud the nomination of Scott Pruitt to head the EPA. This is somebody who's been widely criticized as somebody who doesn't believe in climate science, climate change science, other stuff. How does the Farm Bureau reckon those two things together? How do you, as stewards of the land, support somebody who doesn't believe something that could impact the entire planet?
Well, I guess not everybody is universal on climate change, first of all. You know, I have my doubts because when you look at it, we're measuring something in half a century or a century, and the ice age in North America started 30,000 years ago, reached its peak 20,000 years ago, and disappeared 10,000 years ago. And I think that's why some of the people are questioning if we're giving it time enough. Now, Obviously, there are a lot more people on the planet than there were then, and people on the planet have added a great deal to it. But he's going to be criticized. Yesterday, we had a phone conversation with our farm broadcaster friend, Ron Hayes, in Oklahoma. And he said farmers and people who are in the production business of food and fiber and energy like him because he's trying to do away with a lot of overregulation, as they see it. It's a it's an issue that is argued both ways by scientists and by people who just have very strong feelings. So that that may have a problem. I'm not sure if that has to be approved by the Senate, as cabinet appointments do, but there'll be a lot of criticism on this one.
So
at this point, I say give him a chance.
Sure. So who's on deck then left for Ag Secretary?
Well, we have names like Chuck Connor, who served at USDA in past administrations. He's now president of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. He is an Indiana farm boy, as is Don Bilwock, who served as president of the Indiana Farm Bureau. And both Chuck Connor and Don Bilwock have strong ties to Mike Pence. So it'll be interesting to see if he pushes it. But right now, I think the former senator from Georgia, I think, is on the list. And North Dakota has a candidate on the list. At this point, I really don't know because I have been wrong now on several names that were on the list, and so like everybody else, I'm waiting to see. I'm going to Washington next week on Tuesday to interview for the last time as Secretary Tom Vilsack. Maybe I'll get some insight then.
All right, we'll look forward to that. Orion, have a good weekend.
You too, sir.
All right, 5:57. Finally, here on the program today, the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday. It's December 9th, 2016. The Labor Department reports today, rather I should say, the Commerce Department reports today on wholesale trade inventories for October. Also, some other things we'll watch, not necessarily market movers. It is the funding deadline to avert a federal government shutdown, still unresolved. Congress has sent the president a bill, unclear whether or not he's going to sign that or not. The federal government is going to need money to keep moving after today. Short-term resolution possibly in the works. Republican John Kennedy will face Democrat Foster Campbell in a runoff election for the open United States Senate seat from Louisiana. Just some of the things on the market calendar today, the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, December 9th. That's our program. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow, Monday morning, I should say, with another edition of The Opening Bell. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning right here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Krasanich. Have a great day.